This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Oil and gas prices surge as Russia intensifies its attacks on key Ukrainian cities. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Let's start with a few key numbers. The global Brent crude oil benchmark crossed $112 a barrel this morning, its highest level since 2014. It's since fallen back to $110, up 5.5% at this hour. West Texas Intermediate crude isn't far behind. It's trading at $108 a barrel. The sharp rise in prices comes despite more than 30 countries, including the U.S., vowing to release 60 million barrels from their strategic reserves. And as members of the oil-producing group OPEC and its allies meet in Vienna today to debate whether to increase their output to try to alleviate further price increases. Expectations for that, though, are low. Nathan Piper, head of oil and gas research at Investec, says he expects the group to stick to its current commitment for a gradual rise in overall output.
Don't forget that OPEC Plus includes Russia, Saudi Arabia and the UAE, the ones either actively engaged in this conflict or the others have remained pretty neutral. So we don't expect any significant increase in production to come from OPEC. I think the key thing to remember here is before Russia invaded Ukraine, we already had a tight oil market. So we already expected prices to increase through the course of 2022. And obviously the conflict in Ukraine has accelerated that. Russia is the third biggest oil producer in the world and is a massive exporter of oil. But what we're seeing is that almost people are self-sanctioning. They're not prepared to trade Russian crude. So what we're seeing is rather than a supply disruption, almost a market disruption where 2 or 3 million barrels a day are not being transacted over.
Is it a short-term problem or do you expect this to be a more longer-term problem that perhaps we could solve by more domestic production in some countries, like, for example, the United States?
We might see more domestic production in the States, but you know, U.S. shale producers are being incredibly disciplined. Other sources of new production outside of OPEC are unlikely because of the underinvestment across the supply side, given the focus on trying to starve fossil fuels of access to finance. And then the last wild card might be Iran, of all places, where progress on the nuclear deal and the alleviation of sanctions there may allow them to bring back maybe up to 1 million barrels a day of new oil supply.
It's a controversial question, but at some point, do we have to look at sort of these ESG regulations? So that's environmental, social, and governance, and it's often an acronym that's used to talk about more environmentally friendly or sustainable investment strategies. I guess is the question about some of these commitments versus supply and eventually and price and eventually how that's passed on to the average everyday consumer.
I think it depends what you mean. I mean, is ESG doing something to the highest standard? And I think an element of pragmatism has to come in, not put to one side, but pragmatism. So I would think that US consumers would rather import oil from Canada through the Keystone pipeline that was cancelled than importing almost 600,000 barrels a day of oil from Russia, which is what they're currently doing. So I think it's, you know, applying the ESG filter with a much more pragmatism and realism. And with a focus on energy security, I expect to be the development. So, you know, places like Canada or the UK North Sea or onshore US are where I think people would much rather get their oil and gas from than regimes like Russia or indeed a number of the other OPEC members that we could mention.
It's not just oil prices that we're seeing a huge spike in today, but European natural gas prices have also hit a record high. Is this on concerns that Russia will completely stop delivering gas supplies to Europe?
I don't think so. And I think Russia has delivered gas all the way through the Cold War and everything else. But actually, again, it's back to this transaction. People are trying to unpick their relationships with Gazprom. And it's that sort of self-sanctioning, that inability, that unwillingness to do business with Russian counterparties that I think is really what's causing the effect that we're seeing today.
Nathan Piper at Investec, thanks so much for your time this morning.
My pleasure.
As oil and gas prices surge, shares of energy stocks are also on the rise today. That's pushing benchmarks here in Europe up in the 0.2% to 0.6% range. Stocks in Asia, meanwhile, ended down as much as 2% today. The Moscow Stock Exchange has remained shut for its third straight session. That's as Russia says it has seized control of the Black Sea port of Kherson, but its mayor says it's still held by Ukrainian forces. Our correspondents in the capital, Kyiv, say it's been eerily quiet so far, with fighting on the outskirts of the city. As the war in Ukraine intensifies, business moves against Russia have also increased. Apple and Nike have stopped sales to the country, while Boeing says it's suspending support for airlines, and Exxon becomes the latest oil giant to withdraw from projects there. Cryptocurrency exchanges have also come under increased pressure to block transactions with Russia. But Changping Zhao, or CZ, founder and chief executive of Binance, one of the world's biggest crypto exchanges, says it's not his company's responsibility to block Russian citizens from accessing their cryptocurrencies.
We're not against any people. I think we differentiate between the Russian politicians who start wars and the normal people. Many normal Russians do not agree with war. But unfortunately, the right level of sanctions is not a debate with us. We don't make sanction lists. I can publish my sanction list. You can publish yours. Guess what? No one else is going to follow. It just moves Russian users to other smaller platforms.
He went on to say that he doesn't have a view about whether his platform can be used to evade Western sanctions. Jason Hungerford, a partner at London-based law firm Meyer Brown International, explains though crypto exchanges could still legally be on the line if they are used in that way.
The real risk for crypto exchanges is that the standards are the same whether you are a traditional bank or you're operating in the crypto space. Your obligations are to not deal with sanctioned parties. But the granularity of information and certainly the obligations to collect information that exchanges have to comply with are much different. And so these sanctions laws tend to be either strict liability offenses, so whether or not you know you're dealing with a sanctioned party, you can violate sanctions, or they are on a knowledge basis, but the bar can be relatively low, sort of what you ought to have known, whether it's cash or crypto. Sanctions enforcement agencies will hold exchanges to a high bar.
If we sort of look at the history of some of these exchanges, last year, the UK's financial watchdog, the Financial Conduct Authority, issued a consumer alert against using Binance and said that it wasn't, quote, capable of supervising the company. So does that show the difficulty in being able to determine and stop those who might be using the platform to flout sanctions?
There is sort of an absolute obligation not to deal with sanctioned parties. It's sort of up to the market participant to make sure that they comply. And so that kind of warning from the FCA is to some extent a recognition of that challenge to crypto exchanges and possibly a recognition of some of the limitations exchanges will find in their ability to comply and therefore inherent risks of violating sanctions.
Do you think regulators are looking into how to better regulate something like this? Because, you know, this is a fairly new industry, cryptocurrencies, and the rules are sort of being written as we go. Is there enough attention on oversight and regulation when it comes to sanctions?
It is getting increasing attention from sanctions regulators. The U.S. sanctions regulator, OFAC, put out some what I think is quite useful guidance on compliance for those who are participating in cryptocurrency business. The key message of the guidance is you've got to comply regardless of how difficult it might be. I do think in the future, it might be more a development of the means by which exchanges or other players in the crypto world, so the means by which they comply, I think will develop and mature. If most sanctions at their core are, you can't do X, Y, or Z with this particular counterparty, then you really can't comply unless you know who that counterparty is, or you stop providing X, Y, and Z to everyone. That's, I think, the rub.
Jason Hungerford at Meyer Brown International. Thanks for breaking this down for us this morning.
My pleasure.
And here in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.